This is special coverage from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Senator John Kerry is scheduled to speak to his supporters in Boston at this hour. He's also expected to concede the election to President Bush. Senator Kerry called the president a few hours ago at the White House to congratulate him on his victory. This hour, we'll listen to the senator's speech live. We'll also be talking about the future of the Democratic Party, and we'd like to hear from you as well. What did the Democrats do right? What did they do wrong this time around? What do they need to do in the future to turn things around? We have two phone numbers today. If you voted for President Bush or would have voted for him, the number is 800-344-3893. Again, 800-344-3893. If you voted for Senator Kerry or would have voted for him, the number is 800-344-3864. Again, 800-344-3864. Joining us now from Boston is NPR's Scott Horsley. He's at Faneuil Hall waiting for Senator Kerry. And Scott, good of you to be with us this afternoon.
Neil, and actually just outside of Boston's Faneuil Hall, a large number of Kerry supporters, staffers, and reporters are trying to make their way inside to hear the senator's concession speech. It was just a couple of hours ago that Senator Kerry telephoned President Bush and told him that he was going to concede the race. He'll be telling the nation and his supporters that some point in the next hour or so. This comes after a number of hours of what must have been agonizing meetings with his aides and advisors, trying to figure out if there was a legitimate chance that the uncounted ballots in Ohio would allow Senator Kerry to catch the president's lead there, and of course then change the outcome of the contest.
And I guess the conclusion was that the arithmetic just did not leave any hope of a possible last-second long-odds victory for Senator Kerry, and that's why the reason for the concession. I wonder, Scott, it sounds like you're in a bit of a crowd there, but is the mood there glum?
It certainly is. I've been seeing a lot of Kerry staffers walking around hugging one another, hugging longtime supporters. I think the news today and the news that came in late last night, it was especially disappointing because the Kerry staff had been so upbeat. Their own projections going into yesterday, the early exit polls, their own monitoring of the race, suggested that Senator Kerry had a very strong chance of winning both Florida and Ohio. And then those projections, of course, turned out to be incorrect as the actual numbers came in. So it's not only the disappointment of losing after a long campaign, but the roller coaster of feeling as if they had victory in their grasp and then seeing it fizzle away.
Now, do we know what Senator Kerry said when he called the White House to congratulate the president earlier today?
I don't know, except that I was told that he will explain his decision-making process this afternoon and presumably will say something about what he told the president. Mike McCurry, one of John Kerry's senior advisors, was asked yesterday which of the candidates would give a better concession speech to try to heal what has become a very polarized country. And Mike McCurry said at the time, both of these men had fought hard, and he was sure that both of them would rise to the occasion. As it turns out, of course, it is Senator Kerry who has to rise to the occasion of conceding the race.
And, Scott, just before we let you go, do we have any, we're told that Senator Kerry is running a little bit late. Any idea when he may come down to Faneuil Hall there and make this speech?
Senator Kerry is running characteristically late, you're right. He was scheduled to make his concession speech at 1 o'clock, right about now. There is a large crowd of reporters and supporters who are struggling to get into Faneuil Hall. Staffers had to hastily erect a camera riser for the press corps here, and all of that is taking some time. So I suspect it will be at least maybe a half hour more before we hear from Senator Kerry. But we certainly expect to hear from him sometime in the fairly near term and before President Bush is scheduled to speak at 3 o'clock Eastern.
Okay, and that, again, is about 2 hours from now, so that's the window, I guess, we're looking at. NPR's Scott Horsley, thanks very much for being with us.
My pleasure.
Scott Horsley covered the Kerry campaign for NPR News, and he joined us from just outside Faneuil Hall in Boston. With me here in Studio 3A in Washington is NPR senior political correspondent Mara Liasson, and thanks very much for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Going to be talking a lot about what the Democrats did right and what they did wrong, where they need to go. But before we forget, a thumping victory overall for the Republicans last night.
No doubt about it. I mean, this was a great victory for President Bush and the Republican Party. Not only does he become the first president, I think, since 1988 to win an actual majority of the popular vote, over 50%, they also swept the South. I mean, Karl Rove's grand ambitions of a realigning election to make a permanent majority party might have fallen short, but they did realign the South. I think the political process that started with the 1964 Civil Rights Act ended yesterday. The South is, for all intents and purposes, for now, out of reach for Democrats.
Possible exception of Florida.
No, I don't count Florida. I'm talking about the old Confederacy South. The
Florida
old
was
South.
In the Confederacy.
Yeah, I know, but I'm talking about the states of the old South, what we talk about politically. Florida is a swing state and will continue to be one. I'm talking about the what we call the states of the old Confederacy minus Florida.
And as we looked at that electoral map, many of us watched television last night, that imposes a huge burden, an enormously high hurdle for any Democrat.
There's no doubt. And John Kerry was trying to be the first Democrat ever to get to the White House without winning a single state of what I'm calling the old Confederacy. They looked west. They looked south to the southwest, which made some kind of logic. I mean, that's where there's a surging Hispanic population, and that is where you'd think they could go for more states to win, but it didn't work. I think that doesn't mean it can't work in the future. But I think there will be a debate inside the Democratic Party about whether it is futile to nominate a Northeastern liberal. Since the last three, well, Bill Clinton, Lyndon Johnson, Jimmy Carter, the last three Democratic presidents have been from the South, and there's a reason for that.
And the last Northeastern liberal to be elected would have been John Kennedy?
Kennedy, and some people think that election was squirrely. But yes, that was the last Northeastern liberal. And I think there is going to be the battle inside the Democratic Party that you're going to see is kind of the Hillary Clinton wing versus the John Edwards wing, just to use a shorthand of two people who probably will be running in 2008. Mm-hmm. The strategy that Karl Rove came up with, which was basically a base strategy, which was to go to areas, small towns, rural areas, states where President Bush was already expected to win, but to pump up those margins by tremendous amounts really worked. I mean, in some of those counties in Ohio, instead of winning by 5,000, the Republicans would be looking at the returns and saying, wow, we're winning by 11,000. Mm-hmm. And even though Democrats actually hit their targets in Iowa, they got out the vote that they had planned to. The bar that they estimated for the Republicans was too low. In other words, the Republicans did even better.
The ground war pretty even, actually.
Pretty even. But clearly, you know, cultural conservatives, Christian conservatives, you know, came out in very, very large numbers for the president. And, you know, this was a big victory for him. Now, what he does with it? Another question.
Another question. And maybe
big political victory. Small numerical victory,
big political victory. And again, looking at some of those demographic shifts around the country, Democrats took hope, as you mentioned, in the Southwest. Al Gore took New Mexico last time around by, what, 366 votes, but took it anyway.
Yeah.
And I guess New Mexico at this moment is still too close to
right.
call. But Democrats at one point had hopes that Arizona, Nevada, Colorado might be moving their way as
right.
well.
I think at the end, Colorado was really the only one that they had any hopes for. The other ones dropped off early on. But yes, they did, because those are the kinds of states that if you think the South is out of reach, that makes sense that you'd look to these states where there's slightly more cosmopolitan population moving in from California, big Hispanic growth. That makes sense. I don't think that Democrats will necessarily give up on that strategy. It's just that Kerry fell short of that for a whole number of reasons that, you know, smarter minds than me will now be dissecting over the next couple of weeks and months.
If you're looking for a small silver linings on what might have been a dark evening for the Democratic Party last night, Pennsylvania, thought to have been very tight, broke decisively for John Kerry.
Yes, it did. And the Philadelphia suburbs clearly was a place he did strong. Women voters went for him. you know, that's a state, it seems like, you know, when we're talking about red and blue America, maybe Pennsylvania is going to become part of blue America instead of striped, mm-hmm. you know.
And so you're looking at a map from if you're looking at the Northeast, everything from the District of Columbia and the Maryland border north and east. Well, that was all blue. That was all Democratic. West of Pennsylvania. Well, there you got into Ohio, which, well, just edged into the red camp. No president has still been elected. No Republican has still been elected president without Ohio, and that proved to be the key to his election. And then you get into the swing states, as you mentioned, Iowa, Wisconsin, Minnesota, hard-fought states this time.
Hard-fought states.
And so as we look ahead towards this electoral map, we're talking about a calculus, an addition that we elevate it to calculus sometimes, but the mathematics gets very difficult again for Democratic candidates.
Yeah, it definitely does.
All right. We're talking with NPR's Mara Liasson, our chief political correspondent here in Studio 3A. If you're just joining us, we're awaiting Senator Kerry. He was scheduled to begin his speech to his supporters in Boston's Faneuil Hall about 10 minutes ago. He is still running late, and we're going to be carrying that speech to you live when it begins. George Bush, the newly reelected president of the United States, will be addressing his supporters here in Washington, D.C. at the Ronald Reagan Federal Building at 3 o'clock Eastern Time. We'll also bring you that live. In the meantime, if you'd like to join us, if you're a Bush supporter, the phone number is 800-344-3893, 800-344-3893, and for Kerry supporters, 800-344-3864, again, 800-344-3864. And let's go to a caller on the Republican line. Phil is with us from Tucson, Arizona.
Hi, Neil. How are you doing?
Very well. Thank you, Phil.
Great show. I've enjoyed it through the years. I wanted to call, and I did vote for President Bush. I'm not a... I don't consider myself a voting the party line. I thought it was interesting the last hour how you were talking about voting moral issues. I think everyone really votes on their moral conscience, whether their moral conscience leads them one way or the other. But as I was thinking about what the Democratic Party needs to do, I was thinking about, I listened to that great couple of books on CD, the Theodore Rex series, where it just got a wonderful insight into politics at the turn of the century, last century.
Mm-hmm.
And it reminded me that we, at least from my perspective, I don't feel like I have a legitimate two-party choice because of the issue of abortion, and because the Democrats have made advancing abortion or preserving abortion such a substantial plank in their platform. I don't think they're ever going to gain ground. I think that needs to go away. We need to come to some sort of consensus that we are promoting life in this country, and then somebody like me, I can choose between two parties on economic issues. That major moral issue will be behind it.
So you could not support a Democratic candidate on the issue of abortion?
I couldn't support a Democratic candidate or a Republican candidate if they support abortion, period. That to me is part of the reason I think the Democrats are losing ground. I think that's a losing issue. Ultimately, that issue will bring the Democratic Party into non-existence, I think.
Okay. Phil, thanks very much for the call. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Mara Liasson, earlier we were speaking with Andy Cohut of the Pew Research Center, a pollster, and he was saying he thought that moral values, which so many people cited in the polls yesterday, was in fact code word for not just abortion but gay rights as well.
Yeah, I think it was, although I had an interesting conversation with Andy right before he came on. I don't know exactly what he said with you, but last night when I had talked to Andy, he said moral values was the sleeper issue of this campaign because so many people came out of the polls and told exit pollsters that that was their most important issue.
Mm-hmm.
Not by very much, like by 18%, and then terrorism was 17%. I mean, mm-hmm. it wasn't huge. But it was something that was not at the top of the list during all of the polling pre-election. So, aha, people thought, wow, the evangelical conservative Christian base of the Republican Party really turned out. That's why you get those answers. And you had these anti-gay marriage amendments, state constitutional amendments, in key states like Ohio. But what Andy was saying was the question wasn't very well worded. If somebody asks you which is important to you, moral values or terrorism, everybody's for moral values. You know, but I do think it is code word for abortion or gay rights. And I do think that the one of the things that was important this year were these gay, anti-gay gay marriage state constitutional amendments in key states, and there was one in Ohio. And I think that really helped turn out the base of the Republican Party. There's just no doubt about that.
And abortion is going to be coming up in a couple of different ways in the next four years, certainly in terms of the Supreme Court nomination.
Yeah. That's going to be, if there's any domestic policy battle in the next 4 years, you could call it domestic battle, it's going to be the Supreme Court. There's no doubt. More than anything else, I think that's where the real partisan dividing line is going to be in Washington. And, you know, the whole politics of abortion, which is an interesting thing, if, in fact, you know, Roe versus Wade does get overturned at some point, then the whole landscape will change.
And that also, the character of the United States Senate is going to be a little bit different. Some very conservative Republicans, people who want to outlaw abortion altogether, got elected yesterday.
Yeah, there actually is a, I guess you'd call it a tenuous consensus in America about abortion. It's not, there isn't a consensus on one side or the other, pro-life or pro-choice, but there is this feeling that abortion should be legal with some restrictions. And there is a consensus in among a big part of the electorate that some restrictions on abortion are reasonable. And where that line is going to be drawn is the big question. So far, I think the Republicans have had the advantage because they have chosen to push the restrictions that majorities of Americans prefer, like partial birth abortion or parental consent or whatever it is. But there is a balancing act between the base of the Republican Party. I mean, this is a pro-life, pro-gun party, no doubt. But there, you know, if they go too far in one direction, it could be hard in a general election. But that was not an issue that was at play here.
Let's get a call now on the Democratic line. Dave is with us from Sebastopol, California. Hello, Dave. Are you there? One more shot. Dave in Sebastopol, California, are you there? And I guess Dave is not with us. Let's go to another caller on the Democratic line. This is Veronica from Newtown Square, Pennsylvania.
Hello. Yes, I'm here.
Good. Thank you very much.
Okay. I voted for Kerry. I actually was somebody who went out yesterday and drove a van from 7 in the morning till, I guess, I arrived home about 11 at night, taking canvassers out to get the vote out for the Democrats. I am absolutely devastated. I can't even tell you how devastated I am. I'm scared about the direction that this election tells me this country is headed. I can't believe with the facts that have been put out there about the administration that we have reelected, what they have, how they have deceived the American people on issues like Iraq, we don't even know the half of it. How, you know, death is occurring in my name. You know, the numbers aren't even being shown. Over 100,000 Iraqis. You know, I just don't understand. I do not get it. But maybe it's just that Americans are so selfish that they care about owning their own gun, you know, whether they need to tell somebody else they can or cannot have an abortion, or, you know, who should sleep with who. And I just, there's no way I can ever understand it. And I'm 52, and I don't know where it's going to go.
Veronica, if you had to say there was one issue that drove you yesterday, what would it be?
The war.
Thank you very much for the phone call. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
And Mara, as you know, the people will dispute some of Veronica's numbers.
Well, sure, but I think she expressed something that was so important in this election. This is a 50-50 nation. Now, I know President Bush got 51, and he should get all the credit for that. But this is a nation that's evenly, perfectly divided, and it's not just divided. I think the two halves are kind of alienated from each other. I mean, you heard Veronica saying, "I don't understand how they could reelect him," and I think the two there's a big gulf between the two sides, especially on social issues. The war, I think, was also an important dividing point. But this is a country that has deep, deep divisions, and President Bush, you know, ran the first time as a uniter, not a divider. Many people believe, not his supporters, but his detractors believe he has been divisive. And it's going to be really interesting to see what he does now with his reelection win, not just to his opponents in the Congress or the people who didn't vote for him, but also, you know, people around the world.
Mm-hmm. Well, obviously, one side or the other was going to be devastated whichever way the election turned out. And given the bitterness of the election, trying to heal this divide, which has been palpable at least for 4 years, that's going to be tough.
Really tough.
Yeah. Mara Liasson is going to stay with us here in Studio 3A as we await the speech by Senator John Kerry, a speech that obviously his supporters, in a way they're dreading to hear it, but this is going to be the concession by the Democratic candidate for the presidency of the United States, the senator from Massachusetts. He was scheduled to start speaking about 20 minutes ago. We await his arrival in Faneuil Hall, where his supporters are gathering. When he arrives there and begins to speak, we'll bring you live coverage right here. Also, President Bush is expected to make his victory speech in here in Washington at 3 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. So stay tuned to this NPR station for coverage of that as well. Our coverage resumes after a short break. In Washington, I'm Neil Conan, NPR News.